Welcome to the Into the Void podcast with your host, Sammy Starr. Step into the void.
All right, guys, welcome to the Into the Void podcast. We're here with a four-piece metalcore band from Harrisburg, PA, if not for me. Make sure to like, subscribe, if you guys haven't done that already, for YouTube. It does help grow and make this channel a lot better than what it is if you guys haven't done that already. A lot to dig into here. You guys are pretty big in the scene right now with a huge record that's going to be coming out in a few days. You worked with a pretty big producer on this. Got to listen to it, and there's a lot of themes to tap into here, but we'll get into that in due time. What first got you guys into music, and who inspired you guys to get into music? I know that's kind of like a loaded question.
It's a good one, though.
You go first.
Me? I was going to say you. Yeah, you go first.
Oh, man. Okay. So I remember hearing, I played a lot of Guitar Hero growing up. My dad played guitar. I played guitar for a while, I guess, and I took piano lessons when I was really young. I think I started at like 5 or so.
Damn, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but I understand the theory and stuff behind it. So then I remember, I don't know, I was in like middle school, high school, and I heard like Bullet for My Valentine's like Screaming Fire. Oh my gosh.
Perfect record.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
The kick drum sounded like a machine gun, and I wanted that. They definitely inspired my guitar playing, I guess. Definitely, you know, a lot of really cool bands as far as we've played, like as a band together too, that further inspire me, I guess, and make me want to do better and all that stuff and make our live show cooler, which is what I'm about.
Is that it?
I think so.
For me, my upbringing was a little weird because I grew up on like 90s country music.
Okay.
Yeah, that's like what my parents like. So like that's pretty much all I knew growing up. And I still like, I have a soft spot in my heart for 90s country still. I probably started getting into like more like rock music when I was kind of like a preteen, I guess. And my uncle played guitar, and he used to show me a bunch of bands. And I think the first band I ever heard that had like scream vocals in it was Killswitch Engage.
Oh, and nice. Okay.
They showed them to me, and I was like, this is like the coolest thing I've ever seen. And then around the same time, I was probably like 14 or 15 at this point. The town that I grew up in was really big on doing like local shows where they'd bring in like, usually it was like one pretty decent size like national touring act, and then there'd be like a bunch of local bands from around the area that would open up for them at a rec center. And I didn't really know I was into music at the time, but I went to one of those just to kind of hang out with friends. And I think the show, like the headliner was Texas in July, right when they dropped like their first full length, so they were just kind of blowing up. And then a bunch of local bands that I don't remember, but I just remember it being like the coolest thing I have ever seen in my life. And then from that moment on, I started to like pick up guitar and a bunch of other various things. I was always like a guitar player in bands. I never really wanted to be a singer, but it was kind of like an if the shoe fits kind of scenario. Like that's, I guess, what certain bands needed at the time. So I was a singer, but yeah, that's kind of how I started getting into music.
Now, I feel like you bringing up country, it's kind of like, I never would have picked that up, but like, I guess looking at the album Eulogy, right? Digging into the really sentimental aspect of some of the songs, right? I can see where that comes from. I can see where you tap into that. Just from you saying that, I was just like, whoa, okay. I can see where this is coming from in certain aspects. For me, when I was getting into rock music in general, I think it was initially, it was Guns N' Roses and Foreigner that initially had gotten me into that, right? Because my mom was initially just getting rid of like a bunch of tapes and like vinyl and stuff like that. And I was like, I'm never going to listen to this stuff again. And I was just like, It's like, I'll take it and I'll listen to it. And it just was like all downhill from there. So I was just like, I need this stuff in my life. And it wasn't until initially into my teenage years that I got into Newfound Glory. Right, and on. That just opened up a new level of, like, you know, rock music for me. And then I just got into metalcore and like all this other different stuff. Of course, like, I didn't get into initially playing the music itself, but I felt like I needed to delve into that realm of wanting to be in that atmosphere, of wanting to, you know, be around bands and just telling their stories, because that's where I wanted to be. And, you know, like, look where you're at and look where I'm at. So I think we all found our footing somewhere.
For sure.
I guess this is kind of like a fun question. Who would you most like to collaborate with if you could, and why?
Man, it depends, I guess, at least for me, whether you mean like our song featuring another person, or like co-writing with an artist to create our own song, or producer. Because all of those are very different answers for me. I would really like to collaborate with Ed Sheeran on a song. I think that would be really cool. I know that's a very different genre, but I don't know. He does a lot of really cool stuff, even in like the heavier genres. Which is, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people don't really realize until now with this whole Bring Me the Horizon, Ed Sheeran thing.
I think there's much respect for that, to be honest.
I think that's huge, really.
But. Right. I feel like a lot of people, here's the thing. I feel like Bring Me the Horizon has opened a lot of doors for a lot of artists.
Whether you like them or not.
Right, exactly. Whether you love them or you hate them, I feel like they have opened a lot of doors collaboratively for a lot of different artists. I love them, to be honest, but I feel like a lot of people have been like, oh, well, they've been like downgrading ever since they've been doing this. And I feel like I don't agree with that.
I don't either.
Every single album, no matter the genre, is like a hit.
Right.
I didn't like them until I think Drown came out. Drown was the first song I ever liked by them. And I'm not like a big sounding radio rock kind of guy, but like that song is just so well written, and I was like, wow. And then a lot of their newer stuff, but like that song is just so well written, and I was like, wow. And then a lot of their newer stuff, there's a few songs that I just really like. I like them so much better as like a rock band than I ever did like a deathcore or metalcore band or anything like that. I think they're just doing more interesting stuff now to me.
Right. And I feel like there's this thing to be said about testing the waters within rock music, right? I feel like there's going to be people that are going to want people to stay in your lane. There's going to be people that want you to test the waters. And the thing is, you're not going to be able to please everybody. And I get that. Exactly. But I feel like for us to grow in the rock industry, we have to be able to test the waters in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
You can make the same argument for pop music. You can make the same argument for rap music.
Yeah.
Right. And I feel like nobody really questions that or really says anything about that. They're just like, oh, it's pop music or it's rap music. People are going to do that. But you have to make the same argument for rock music. You have to be able to be brave enough or bold enough to channel those different genres and make different things happen.
Yeah, pretty much every sound we have nowadays came from experimentation and genre bending. And
exactly.
The boundaries of whatever style of music you're playing. Like, we would not have any of the genres we have today without experimentation.
I totally agree. I'm glad we're on the same page here.
Yeah.
I'm glad we can have these conversations.
Yeah.
I know for you guys, music has kind of always been within your blood, and this is always what you have wanted to do. But I guess if you weren't doing music, what could you see yourselves doing if you thought about that?
does producing count? Because that'd probably be your answer.
Yeah, I guess. If that's a, I'm going to assume that it doesn't count, though. But if it does, I really like recording bands and running sound for bands and stuff like that. And, you know, writing songs for bands and whatever else. But I don't know. I would definitely own a business of some sort. I guess I don't know what. I like that kind of bringing something up from the ground feeling, I guess.
Yeah, and I feel that. For me, I'd probably say something having to do with animal rescue.
Oh, nice.
I would like to do. That's always been like a goal of mine. If I have like a ton of money someday, is to just like have a facility for animals that are deemed like too old or unadoptable or whatever to just come and like live out the rest of their lives in comfort, I guess, which sounds kind of morbid, but that's something. Cool. That, yeah. Yeah, I've always wanted to do something like that. I'm a big animal person.
I feel like those are very admirable things. And I do think your answer for producing does count, because I mean, like, if you weren't doing like, you know, making music, I think producing does count. I do want to kind of step away from, I mean, I do have other fun questions for you guys, but I do want to tap into the actual album aspect of why we're here and why we're talking about all of this. So Eulogy, there's a lot that we have to talk about here in terms of the creative process and the songs itself, because I feel like we're diving into a lot of deep territory here in terms of not only the songwriting, but also instrumentally what's happening here. This is an album that is heavy, but not in a bad way. I feel like it hits heavy where it needs to, and emotionally, but also instrumentally. And I think that's very hard to do at times when you're tackling things like mental illness and suicidal ideation and, you know, the loss of people that you care about. I feel like you can talk about those things, but at times when you're trying to do heavy on top of heavy, it kind of gets lost in translation sometimes. Yeah. I don't know if you've listened to albums sometimes where people try to do that same thing, and it's like, I see what you're trying to do here, but it's like there's too much heaviness going on. It's too much for me.
Yeah, okay. I totally get where you're coming from there.
But I don't think that's what's happening here. I feel like there's the right amount of heaviness going on here. And I think you guys did a wonderful job of displaying that. So kudos to you guys.
Thank you.
No, it's a very beautiful album. You guys expressed that it was hard to kind of come out of your shell and express these kinds of things because it was something that was out of your comfort zone, something that you've never done before.
Right.
What was the creative process like writing-wise, and how did that impact that?
Well, when we started writing for this record specifically, I think, what was Dearly Deceased the first one we
probably
had done? Yeah, yeah, I think Dearly Deceased was the first song we kind of had like the full skeleton of like, okay, this is what the song's going to be. This is the general idea of what the tone and lyricism is going to be. And then, I don't know, when I was writing that song, I wanted to try something new for me, which was perspective writing, like writing from a perspective different from my own. Like that song kind of came out. And then I think the second song we wrote was called Ghost, which is one that's not out yet.
On a very personal level too. I think it's one of the most
personal ones
on there.
That's one of my favorite songs on the record. But like, I kind of noticed that like how when we would write each song, like they were kind of thematically going in the same direction of stuff that I've never personally sang about. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and song after song that Hayden and Zach were pulling out instrumentally, I was like, man, this is really cool. Like, what can I do to kind of match what they're writing with my lyricism? what really kind of pushed me to go farther with it is just how much I enjoyed their instrumental writing. Mm-hmm. And it was cool because we were, the songs were coming out very different than anything we've ever really done before. Like you said, there's a lot of heaviness to it. There's certain spots on the record that are like way heavier than anything that we've ever done as a band. And then there are also spots on the record that are like way more melodic and I guess softer than anything we've ever done. And it was just trying to kind of fill that spectrum out with, you know, whatever was in my brain at the time creatively that would push the theme of the album further.
There's certain songs on here that there's definitely a great balance that you do show lyrically, and I think instrumentally, I think you just pointed out Ghost as being definitely a great song. I don't think there's words that can possibly describe how beautifully done that song is. I think lyrically, there's no words for it, but it definitely describes that personal struggle one goes through when one is going through depression.
I really appreciate that.
No, you guys did a fantastic job of that, but just that balance of just heavy and then just those tiny little after notes of melodicism in between that kind of balances out what's going on. Like you said, Dearly Deceased, I felt like that was a beautiful track to end with. Again, I feel like you guys do a really good job of lyrically displaying yourselves throughout the record, but it's just a wonderful perspective of showing when you want people to care when you're here in the now. But it's like it feels like nobody does care, but when you're gone, it's like everybody just comes in droves and shows that they care.
Yeah, and that's something we see like all the time in real life and in pop culture, like all that kind of stuff. It's like I feel like it's a very relatable theme. Even if like somebody necessarily hasn't been through something like that, they've seen something like that.
I think another great song on there that you guys didn't mention was Bury Me. It can be a song about the ending of a relationship romantically, but you can also flip it and say that it could be the end of a friendship. It could be the end of something, of a relationship with a family member or whatever, but it's about burying something that's close to you. And I felt that on so many levels. And again, just lyrically, this is a very great record that I feel like people are really going to resonate with on so many levels, because you guys really did take the time to really dig in and just show different aspects, not just, you know, intrinsically on the social aspects of the things that we go through, but just like songs like Better Days and Burn, you just show on a humanity level of things that are important to us, right? I don't think very many bands kind of go into so many of those different aspects on one record. I think you guys just do a great job of humanely showing what's important to us as people. That's what's going to make you guys go far as a band, because you kind of, if you guys continue to do this on your albums, it's what's going to show and make you guys stand out as probably one of the best bands in the metalcore industry right now. That's just what I feel.
I appreciate it.
No problem.
That's exactly what we were trying to do with this album from a lyrical and musical standpoint.
You guys also worked with some pretty cool people as well, as far as producers. You guys worked with Carson Slovak and Grant McFarland for this record. I mean, for people that don't know who that is, I mean, they worked with August Burns Red, they worked with Era, you know, Ashes to New. like Moths to Flames. I mean, I could go on and on with the people that they've worked with. What impact did that have with producing this record?
Massive. He's been working with them a good bit longer than I have.
Yeah. Pretty much everything that's out with If Not For Me has been done through them. And I really enjoy working with them. They're, in my opinion, one of the best producers, mixers, songwriters, as far as, especially metalcore goes.
And there's two of them.
Yeah, there's two of them.
Right. Yeah. It's like wham, wham, wham. Jesus yeah. Christ.
The best way to describe working with them is like magic.
Yeah, honestly.
They're wizards.
Yeah.
So I don't know, like we, you know, and we all, the three of us do like, you know, recording ourselves and stuff like that. So we come to them with like a pretty crafted out idea of what we want. We have, for the most part, we do, you know, all of the sound designing stuff ourselves, and we track demos for all the songs. So I don't know. And they take that and, you know, we re-record a lot of the stuff, and then they just like know exactly where everything should be, how everything should sound. It just works. Like, you know, we don't have to say much to them.
Yeah.
They
pretty much know exactly what we want sometimes before we know what we want.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. Yeah. And like I said, there's two of them, which is awesome, because while Hayden and Zach are in tracking guitars with Carson, I could be in another room recording vocals with Grant. And it's like such a good workflow with them, because they're both great at everything, but then they're also, they both balance each other out kind of in a way that, like, when one is busy doing one thing, the other is busy doing something else important. And it's like, it keeps the workflow really nice. And like Hayden said, like they're just wizards. Like,
yeah. Right.
For Bury Me, for example, was a song that we wanted to do a song for this record that we didn't really have any ideas coming in. We just wanted to sit down and co-write a song with them. We're like, okay, so we want these kind of influences, this kind of sound and stuff. And Grant and Carson sit down and they're like, okay. And then we just start like building this song from scratch. And you know, they
like
just
an hour,
yeah, it was like an hour, and they just keep like, you know, adding different layers and be like, oh, what do you guys think about that? And we're like, yeah, like and then I think I once we built the instrumental that day, I think I went home and wrote most of the vocals like that night, and then we recorded it the next day. But like just working with them is, it's a breeze. It's so easy.
Fun fact about Bury Me, one of the lyrics was cornbread.
That's not true. we were trying to think of a good rhyming word for one of the stanzas. I can't remember what it was. And Grant looks at me and he's like, what about cornbread? And I'm like, yeah. they're really funny guys.
Yeah, they're very funny people.
Really fun to work with. And Grant especially is like, he's, anytime he's like joking around, he's so serious at the same time. So it can, he's like one of those people that has,
if you don't know of it.
Yeah, so. He has a really good poker face. Yeah. So like he could be totally screwing with you, and like if you're not reading into it, he'll just like keep going with it. And it's so funny.
Oh, I love working. My goodness.
Great guys.
Next, I feel like you guys should probably name one song, if not anything, on the next like record should be cornbread.
I think you're right.
Just do it.
We might re-release the like the original version. I'm just kidding.
If I see it, I will just be like, I love it.
Sweet.
We're gonna sell it as an NFT.
Oh my god, stop. I've just been seeing nothing about like just straight NFTs, and I just, oh my god, I can't. I know we sort of touch base on, you know, the heaviness of this record and working with the producers on this record. For you guys finishing this record, how has this hit you, I guess, on a personal level now that it's all done and it's all out? I know you guys said that it was hard to kind of touch on the, like, a number of different things because you guys were not used to like pouring out that much emotion onto one record. It's kind of like releasing like a journal entry or like a diary entry. And yeah, it's all well and good when you're working on it together, but you know, within the next couple of days, everybody's going to be listening to it and it's going to be released out to the world, yeah. Right? It's an overwhelming, but it's like a cathartic kind of experience, right? How does this feel to you on a personal level as, you know, as artist, knowing that it's all done and, you know, you're going to be releasing it like within the next couple of days?
Relieving.
Relieving?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, we've been sitting on it for a while and like trying to finalize all the details and stuff like that. So it's like, it's definitely a relief, but at the same time, you know, obviously still full of anxiety knowing how it's going to go and all of that.
It's been pretty cool for me, especially being like the, I don't want to say like primary lyricist because that sounds like douchey, but I mean,
Zach and I are not very involved in the lyric writing unless something sounds stupid, which it never really does. So
I don't like saying stuff like that sometimes. Yeah. But it's been really cool because I've had you know, as singles drop, I've had people reach out to me about them and talk about how they like really like what I'm talking about and that kind of stuff. Like I remember, I think Burn was the first one we dropped, right? That was the first one. And I had like a bunch of people hit me up about that one. Like, hey, thank you for talking about this kind of stuff. And I'm like,
yeah.
I was like, oh, like I didn't realize it was going to, like, I'm glad people are paying attention to the lyricism, but I didn't realize people were gonna, you know, read that much into it. And I've had people, you know, messaging me, telling me that they really relate to the lyrics of some of the stuff that I'm talking about. And like, that to me is the best part because I mean, that's pretty much why I wrote a lot of what I wrote. It was just because they were topics that were, you know, weighing on me pretty heavily at the time. And the fact that things that I'm saying are touching other people's lives is the coolest part to me. It's pretty cool. It's pretty overwhelming, honestly, but in a good way.
If there was a message that you guys wanted people to take from Eulogy, what would you want?
I guess my primary one would be, I wrote, I guess, the bulk of this record from like a mindset where I didn't really want to be around anymore. Like I if you catch my drift. Mm-hmm. But I guess the main message would be, you know, healing is, it's messy, right? It's not like a linear thing. It's not something that, you know, you just wake up one day and you're better and you just, it's a gradual slope to being all good and happy and all that kind of stuff. Like that's not how it is. But the thing about it is it's not something that you should ever have to feel like you need to do it by yourself. Like I've had a lot of friends throughout, I don't know, the past 2 years or so that have done some really cool things for me and helped me out through some stuff that like, I don't know if I'd be around without them. And that's just such an important thing to me is like, if you're dealing with something, like talk to your friends, talk to your family. Cause it's not something that you need to do alone. Cause I mean, most of the time, if you just try to deal with what you're dealing with by yourself, you know, you get overwhelmed. I don't know, you give up, you stop caring. Sometimes you need that extra push and somebody in your corner. So that would kind of be my biggest message is to just, if you're dealing with something, don't feel like you have to deal with it alone.
I think a message that kind of everybody I feel like needs right now, especially with everything that's been going on.
Yeah.
Within the last few years, there's been a lot of heaviness with a lot of different stuff that's been going on recently. And I feel like I said, a couple of questions back, I feel like this record kind of taps into a lot of those different avenues perfectly. So I feel like a lot of people will register with this for a lot of different reasons. For some, I guess, less heavier questions. If you could tour with any artist, who would it be with and why?
I have answers for this.
Okay, you go. I have answers for this one.
I think it's a lot. Yes. More than I'd like to
admit. I actually don't.
Really? Two of my top would be like Moths to Flames and Under Oath.
Ooh.
Mainly because Spencer of Underloaf and Chris from like Moths to Flames kind of were two of my biggest influences when I was learning how to scream. Like that's where I take a lot of my style from and delivery and that kind of stuff. Like I've always felt like they have such cool tone and phrasing, just like the way their lyrics kind of flow. They're like, I don't know, they're a little unorthodox sometimes. Like they're not as rhythmic as some other vocalists are, where it's like they're just kind of screaming and you know like exactly what the cadence is and that kind of stuff. Like you know exactly what they're going to be saying before they say it. But mm-hmm. I've always admired how the two of them will throw in a lot of different syllables and stuff like that to make the lines end where you don't think they're going to end, or like keep going where you don't think they're going to be. Does that make any sense?
No, it definitely does. Definitely does.
The way they phrase things sometimes has been really cool to me. And I've kind of, I emulate a little bit of that style.
Definitely, especially with the latest record. I feel like, talk about a rebranding and like shoving it in your face. Their new album was definitely crazy good. A multitude of levels. If I could get inside of their head and just kind of just talk to them for like 30 minutes, I would love to hear how that came into like fruition from start to finish, how that all went down, because it's an amazing record. So if you guys ever got to actually tour with them, I would be floored.
Okay, with either of them, yeah. That'd be like a dream come true for me. What about you? What do you think?
I don't know. Bring Me the Horizon would be rad.
That would be crazy.
I mean, that's like definitely, you know, shooting for the stars, which is, I don't know, what I think you should do. Right, yeah, as far as metalcore, you know, and actually fitting into the bill, probably Bring Me the Horizon.
Let's just get them all on a bill just for you guys, right? That would be amazing. Yeah. I'd be down for sure.
Probably on a festival somewhere it's happened.
Probably. And if it hasn't, then we'll make it happen.
Yeah.
Bring Me the Horizon, Under Oath. If you're listening to this podcast, let's just make it happen.
People that would draw too, like that would be massive.
That would be super massive.
We'll bring 6-7 people these days.
Just tag them into this podcast and make sure that they hear that you want to perform with them. I know you guys are actually going back on tour for, you know, the new album. Is there places that you have performed at that you like best?
As far as my preference, I guess, I really like, there's this venue, and we're not exactly playing it on this tour, but in New Hampshire, there was this place called The Bungalow that we used to play a lot, and that place is always rad. We played there a lot, and I've always really enjoyed it, and we're playing those people's new venue. It's called The Jewel, which I believe is in the same town, Manchester.
Yeah, it is.
So I'm really looking forward to that. That will be the first time that we're playing there. But there's definitely a lot of cool venues that I like. I'm sure Patrick will mention some of them.
Sadly, a lot of the ones that we used to hit, I feel like got shut down because of COVID.
Yeah.
Like
they right.
The Bungalow was one of them. And they, I guess they have a new building now. But they had to close their doors because of that. One of our hometown venues, the Chameleon Club, had to close down because of it. I think Revolution's Bar and Grill Revolution's something,
yeah,
what it's called.
In Amityville,
New York was a really cool place that we played. They got shut down. There's Voltage Lounge in Philly is kind of bobbing above the water. It kind of sucks because a lot of those places were places that we played, and I was like, these are awesome venues. I'm trying to think of one that we didn't like that much.
I didn't like, and I think it's a lot of us agree on this, Bar 13 in Delaware.
Oh,
I really don't like to, you know, throw people under the bus, but that one wasn't that great.
Yeah.
It was a fun show, don't get me wrong, but it was,
yeah,
like,
the show is great, but
it's annoying.
Yeah,
you know,
we had like to deal with a lot of stuff that day. That was annoying. And then another one, we kind of had a bad experience with Dingbats in New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, just, no.
Which, that wasn't their fault.
Yeah, it wasn't their fault.
Like, somebody further down in the town, like, I guess hit a transformer with their car, and the power was out until, like, it was, like, 8:30 or something like that when the final power finally came back on, and there's, like...
We were about to leave.
Yeah, there's, like, just four like bands playing that we had to get through, and it was so funny because... We all decided, like, we were like, okay, if it's the whole tour package, we were touring with Misery Loves Company at the time, and we both agreed that, like, all right, if it's not up and running by 8:30, we're dipping. And then,
oh,
like, 29, the power comes back on.
Yeah,
we were like, you gotta be kidding me. So we every band played, like, really abbreviated sets, and then we were kind of on our way.
And not only that, like, the people that were there, you know, are just, like, not feeling it anymore. And after a while, leaving, but, like, you know.
Yeah, like,
nobody knew if it was gonna happen.
People just had to wait around, and a lot of people
ended up
leaving, and it was.
Props to the people that stuck around.
Yeah,
you know,
mad props to those people. But yeah, like I said, that definitely wasn't the venue's fault. It was just like a really unfortunate scenario.
I feel like, here's the thing. From a person that actually lives in New Jersey, the hitting, you got to understand. I feel like I got to explain a couple of things.
Okay.
The hitting of transformers is like, I feel like there's like, that's like a daily occurrence.
I believe it.
It's very annoying, and I feel bad, and I have to apologize on behalf of New Jersey people, because
I love New Jersey more than most people for I don't know whatever reason people don't seem to like New Jersey, but
I mean there's reasons why New Jersey people hate New Jersey, but like
I'm on my own gas, so I'm sorry that you have to deal with that. It's like way faster to pump your own.
Right.
I was trying to look if we were playing anywhere in New Jersey on this run, but I guess we're not.
Delaware is close.
Delaware is close, but one of I remember this one experience we had in New Jersey where it was kind of really funny. Recording in like August or something like that, so it was like super super hot, and we got to the venue basically on fumes and in our gas tank, and then after the show we were trying to, I think you and Zach were sleeping,
yes,
and our drummer at the time was driving around to try and find a gas station so we could like idle the car and have air conditioning to sleep in, but all of the gas stations were closed, and we finally found one. But the dude was like passed out on the counter inside that was supposed to like, he was just like sleeping, and like, he didn't want to like bang on the door to wake him up. So he just slept in the heat that night, and it was miserable.
Oh my God, no.
I would have pounded on that glass, just so you know.
I guess we should have woke you up.
Yeah.
What part of New Jersey are you in?
I'm in the, like, you know where the AC area is?
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so, oh my God.
Sure, like a few, or I guess it was a couple months ago.
Had the beret or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool. Oh my gosh.
That place was really nice.
That place was nice.
Yeah, that's probably the nicest place in New Jersey that we've played so far.
Oh, thank God. Okay. At least there's something good that came out of our state, right?
Yeah, we had a good time there.
Okay, good. At least there's one good thing that came out of there. Oh my God. With the nature of the music scene and how people are putting out music these days, some people are just kind of just like releasing singles because of how it's reaching, you know, people in the masses versus releasing albums. And I know you guys have released an album. it's kind of hard to see how, I guess, bands are going to reach people nowadays because of just how everything is now. Do you think the internet and streaming services have a lot to do with how that is now? And how do you think that has impacted the music industry as a whole?
I'd like to start off with a very unpopular opinion. And bands are going to hate me for saying this, but I very much appreciate Spotify and Apple Music and all of those streaming services that everyone thinks that they don't pay out, really, which they give like almost all of their money to the bands, which is pretty incredible to me. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a really good thing. And I don't know, I use Apple Music sometimes. I'm going to be honest, I'm an old fashioned CD guy. I buy CDs, physical copies, put them on my computer, and then I burn them onto my phone. So that's what I actually do. But I do have Apple Music too. And I really think it's cool that like it knows what you listen to. And if somebody that you like puts out a new song, it'll like give you a notification for it, you know, so you're up to date. You don't have to follow the artists on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You don't have to go see their shows live to know when they put a new song out, which is really cool. All the playlistings and stuff like that, you know, is out there that, you know, I think the Spotify has a daily mix, right? Yeah. Or something like that, weekly mix too or something.
Yeah, there's a couple different.
Yeah, and you know, it's really cool that Spotify's algorithms will notice like trends in what people listen to and throw in, you know, our song, someone else's song. And I think that's a really cool thing. I know I went off course a little bit with this.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I feel like this whole episode is kind of gearing or off course really with kind of diving into music and like different sorts of avenues of stuff, but that's kind of like what Into the Void is. We're just bantering about different things, all music in general. So
yeah, all the questions kind of fizzle into the void. But yeah, I don't know, and I like the idea of the singles and the album kind of thing. Yes. Because, like, I personally will not ever get into a band that doesn't have an album out. Like I said, I buy CDs. Someone could show me a song and I could like it, but I'll never listen to it again. And, you know, no offense to any bands, but, like, if I have a CD that I put and I can listen to the whole thing, I'll probably play it a couple hundred times at least.
Right.
Really, our business plan is what I like. You know, when someone's going to put out an album and they throw the singles at you, like, along the way, and then when the album comes out, they give you a couple extra tracks that weren't released as singles. That's my preferred listening and, you know, business model, I guess.
I guess to circle back to the streaming thing, to me, streaming is like, it's a very double-edged sword. It's objectively changed the way people consume music. Like, there's no argument there. In some ways good and in some ways bad. But at the same time, it's... music has never been more accessible, which is great for bands like us. Like it's streaming has made it so much easier to put your music out there and be able to market it to people. Before, you know, like a small little indie band or whatever, you'd have to make an album or an EP or whatever, and then hopefully maybe you could get it in like a local CD store that, you know, sells whatever, and then hopefully that kind of makes it into enough people's hands that the buzz circulates and all that. But now it's like, if you put something out and you advertise and you keep hammering the market, it's just so much more, it's so much easier to get your stuff out there from like a band's perspective. And then from an audience perspective, it's so much easier to find all this stuff. Like you can just type in a keyword of what you're looking for on the internet and you'll, you know, 1,000 post-hardcore bands will pop up. They're not all going to be good, but you might find some gems in there. Me and him are both, I feel like when we put music on, we usually listen to like a whole record.
Yeah.
Like if I'm in the mood for just like, I don't know, sad boy pop punk or something, I'll put on like a playlist. But most of the time when I'm listening to music, I'm going to listen to a full album. I still really like to have, you know, a whole record out. But at the same time, like, singles are the way to go to keep an audience.
Yeah.
Because like I said earlier, things like streaming have just changed the way people listen to music. Like, they can have, when somebody could have anything they want, whenever they want it, like, say they want to, you know, switch genres all the time and all that kind of stuff. It's like, you're not, a lot of people, you're not going to hold their attention for like a full record, which is okay. Because, you know, some people you will. I think one of the first bands that really caught my attention with the whole just crushing you with singles thing and then the full record comes out was Ice Nine Kills the first horror record they did. I can't remember. But like, that was the first time.
The one with the book.
Yeah.
Every trick in the book.
Yeah.
Every trick in the book.
And I'm not saying they're the first ones that ever did it, but that was the first time I noticed that they drop almost a single and then like a month later, here's another one. And then like, when you think they're going to stop, like, oh man, more singles. Like, they just like keep hitting you and hitting you to kind of keep your attention. Cause I mean, honestly, people's attention spans aren't what they used to be when it comes to music. That, right? it's okay, but you know, that just hitting people with singles over and over again to keep their attention just seems to be more the way to go lately.
Right.
But I'm the kind of person that also likes to have a record to go with it at the end, just because I mean, I still buy CDs too. Like, We're a little old-fashioned.
We are. People make fun of us, so that's all right.
No, I totally agree. I mean, Ice Nine Kills is definitely one of my all-time favorite bands. I definitely agree with you with their concept of releasing the singles and then leading up to the album has definitely been one of the best ways in which they have released albums. And it's definitely been like one of the most successful because... You look at, you know, Silverstream and then Welcome to Horrorwood.
Like, blew up.
It really did.
Like, they're one of those bands that whether you love their music or you hate their music,
you have
like,
to appreciate it.
Their advertisement and marketing campaigns and stuff are top notch. Like,
I always like that.
Their team knows what they're doing.
Funnily enough, I had a conversation with Spencer about all of these records and... The guy is a genius for how not only he approaches just how he writes music on a multitude of levels, but like my jaw dropped just hearing him speak just on everything. I like, it was only like 30 minutes to like 40 minutes, but like the guy really just knows his stuff.
Yeah. He's a smart dude. He knows exactly what he wants and exactly how to do it.
Yeah,
exactly.
You gotta respect
him. You have to respect him, whether you, like you said, whether you like his music or you hate his music. I personally love and respect him as an artist, but yeah, he definitely one of the top people within our genre. I guess this is the perfect question to lead into this. What strengths do you believe make a great band or continues to make a band successful?
I think we're all very big believers in the fake it till you make it concept.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which doesn't necessarily mean, you know, be fake. Like that's not at all what it means. But basically by that, we mean take yourself seriously or nobody is going to. Professionalism, it goes a long way. When you're, you know, in the music business and you're, you know, you're going to events, you're going to shows, whatever it may be, you're playing shows, you should look like a band. Look like, hey, these guys.
Even when you're not the ones playing.
Yeah, even when you're not.
Right.
If you're just there and people see you or they know who you are or something like that, it's, there's a certain sense of professionalism that goes along with it. You know, you wouldn't see a random guy and like khaki shorts and flip-flops and I guess any t-shirt or whatever and be like, oh, that guy's in a metalcore band, unless it was August Burns, right? But see, I don't know if that makes any sense, but it's just kind of like a way you carry yourself, you know. Take opportunities, don't be afraid to try things that you've never tried before.
I agree with all of that. As a band too, you need to have certain people that specialize in different things too.
Yeah, that's a good point.
There's a lot of bands that I see that are, you know, have a lot of expensive gear and that have no one in the band that knows how to use it properly. And that always gets me because, you know, from being the sound guy, the production guy, you know, it causes a lot of problems, I guess. You know, when you go on stage, you have to play in 10 minutes and you have technical difficulties and, you know, then your set is cut short to like one song. It doesn't look good, you know, and it obviously you don't get to, you know, it makes you angry. But thankfully, all of us understand like the gear perspective. Patrick is very strong in the lyrics and writing good melodies and stuff like that. Zach and I are good at writing instrumentals that are good. And, you know, we all have our other strengths, too, that are aside from that.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point.
Yeah, Patrick's very good at talking to people and being a very good people person.
I love talking to people.
Okay.
Yeah. That's one of my downfalls on tour is when I should be resting my voice, I'm just running my mouth to people
it is
all
hard.
The time. But, yeah, that's a good point is just, you know, everybody should have their niche kind of in the band. Like, you need to have somebody that's good at certain things to balance things out.
And if you don't have that, you need to pay someone.
Yeah.
to either, to be very, very good. But yeah, if you don't have anyone in the band that's good at writing lyrics, pay someone else to do it. And if you don't have, you know.
Yeah, like.
Obviously, it's hard to pay someone to be a good singer for you. I mean, I'm sure you could do it if you pay them enough money, but, you know. That if that's the case, then you have to do everything else really well until the right person comes along.
Some people are really good songwriters, but not good players, and vice versa. Like they might be an incredible player, but not that great of a songwriter. To have somebody in the band that balances that out.
Yeah.
But like, if you don't have that, like in our opinion, there's nothing wrong with writing with a producer. You know, like. Hire a producer that you like their sound and their style and be like, yeah, let's write an album. Like there's nothing wrong with that kind of collaboration aspect. A lot of people kind of, I don't know, I feel like it's a negative. It's kind of a negative stigma that, you know, people kind of turn their nose up at things that weren't written only by the band exclusively and that kind of stuff. Anything that you listen to on the radio nowadays has so many hands in the pot, you know.
Right.
Especially on the radio, which again, no offense to this, because I'd rather hear a good song than a song that was written by the artist. You know, on the radio, it's like the artist probably barely touch it aside from maybe writing lyrics and stuff like that, which again is fine.
It's kind of a little tangent, but that's that gets a negative stigma.
Yeah. We're good enough between the three of us that we don't necessarily have to do that, but we do, you know, we like to do it.
I think
especially for certain songs.
There's two co-write songs on the record that we did co-writes for. And, you know, we only did that because we wanted to. We wanted to have an outside perspective in our writing.
Yeah.
Right.
And the songs came out cool, so.
Yeah. Even when we just go to a producer with our own songs that we have, you know, not that they take them and they're like, yeah, this isn't good, let's make it good.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, they change parts around if they think, you know, hey, this note seems like it wouldn't fit as well as this one or something. And then, you know, that's cool, but there's nothing wrong with that. That's why we don't do the whole entire project ourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could do it, but it wouldn't be as good.
Right. I think you guys hit the mark on, you know, like, I think that's why it's called a creative process for a reason you know, get all hands on deck and to work with different types of people. Cause I mean, you look at bands that have been out for like probably a decade or more. I'm sure that yes, most of the writing does come from themselves. I'm sure that there's a lot more that goes into that than just taking a lot of, you know, the writing that's done with themselves or whatever. There's a lot that goes into that. So I agree.
Like the three of us, Hayden, Zach and I are like, we all come up with ideas that the others wouldn't come up with.
Yeah.
But to have that collaboration is great. But then when we add that aspect of collaboration in with, you know, like a professional set of ears, like that's just another layer to it.
Exponentially increases.
What's your favorite part about being a musician and what's the least favorite part about being a musician for you guys?
That's a good question.
This is weird, but I like setting everything up.
Oh my gosh. Really?
I like taking everything and putting it and making it work. But that's not that. I don't know. I wouldn't say that's my favorite. I like actually playing too, obviously.
I guess my least favorite part is definitely loading in and out. That sucks every time. But my favorite would definitely be getting to meet, I guess, like-minded people, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, some of my favorite parts about shows is obviously, like, you know, performing is great. But then, you know, the moments when you're off stage after the show and you just get to mingle with people and, you know, talk about the show or talk about things not even necessarily related to music, and you're just in a whole vibe of people that are stoked about the same things you are and are there for the same reason you are. Like that's kind of my favorite part, is just getting to meet and hang out with really cool people.
I like recording though.
we like recording a lot too.
Sometimes writing is stressful when you hit that rut, but other than that, like when everything's going and you have ideas, I think it's really fun and easy to write with a room full of other people. Sometimes when it's just like me by myself, I don't mean to get too in detail, but like, you know, I'll get an intro, a verse up till almost a chorus or something and then not know what to do. I have to walk away or bring other, you know, someone else in the band in.
If you could change anything about the music industry, what would it be?
I don't like those kind of questions.
Oh, God. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I like to roll with the punches, I guess. Like the time traveling questions, you know, go back and change something. Like, I never change anything because I like to work with what I'm dealt. I like the music industry for a reason, I guess. So, obviously, it's hard, but I like that.
Some people that you meet will view everything as, like, a competition.
Feel that.
Yeah. And that's just like lame.
Yeah.
Not everything has to be like, oh, how many streams did your new single get? And like all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I do hate people that play the numbers game.
Yeah.
Even like, though it's obviously a necessity for a reason.
Yeah, like numbers are important, but if you feel the need to one up everybody that you meet, like it's just, I mean, nobody likes you.
Yeah. I think it's good. Just like when everyone's always like negative about something, it definitely just makes things not as fun.
Yeah, there's just too much of that, you know, cutthroatness, I guess.
Maybe everything is too expensive, but
okay, that's a good one too. Being music is ridiculously expensive.
I agree with that, because within the genre that we're in, there should be a healthy amount of competition. It's not like we're like the most popular genre. I feel like we should be sticking together on a multitude of levels. And I feel like I started this project for a reason, because I feel like there's a lot of bands, you know, including yourselves, a lot of hidden gems out there that don't get a lot of recognition that they deserve. And that are very talented and, you know, definitely put it out all, like they put it out all on the line to show that. And it's not like a lot of other genres out there that have, because they're more popular, they have all those avenues and opportunities to be able to show that. I feel like, again, whether you're a music journalist or you are a person that is a musician that's in a band, we all need to kind of show a sense of solidarity and be working together, at least in some way, shape, or form. Not say that we have to be kumbayaing all like all the time, but we do have to help each other. Like
some competition that I like is like, I go to a show and I see like a friend's band or somebody else in like the local area, and I see them do something really cool or something that I really like. And I'm like, wow, that's cool. That makes me want to do this better or like something like that.
Right. Exactly.
Like that's where your competition should be. Not, oh, I don't like this band because I can't think of a good example.
Their guitarist has a funny haircut.
Yeah. They see something a band does and it's like, oh, they kind of suck. We could do this better and that kind of stuff. There's like good competition and lame competition. If you see something that you like and is really cool and you want to be inspired by that, that's what it's all about for me. And there's been a lot of local bands like throughout, you know, pretty much whenever I started going to shows, that I would see them do something and be like, wow, like that's, I want that. That's, right. That's why I got into music in the first place. I started seeing that and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And I'm like, yeah, like this is what I want to do. To me, like that's where the competition should come from, not from wanting to be better than everybody else, if that makes sense.
What's the best advice you have been given as a musician?
Play to a click.
Yeah.
Play to a click would be one of mine.
Yeah. It's like a clump of things that have been told to me, but I never listened to anyone else. And you know, when they tell you, oh, don't pay a manager because you don't, you know, that's not really something you do. They get a percentage of, you know, and I never understood these things until I went and did it myself, which I think, you know, some people are just going to have to do that to learn.
Yeah, there's a learning curve for sure.
Yeah, but there's so many things that I have been told that I don't take seriously, I guess.
Like what?
I don't know. Like that, like the manager thing, we paid a manager, he didn't do anything. Just little things, I guess. Cody, the guy who runs our record label now, has given me so many.
He's great.
Yeah, he's.
Cody is such a good guy.
He's awesome.
He's given me so many pointers throughout the years that I have not listened to.
Oh my God.
And then I realized later why he was right. And I mean, that's important. You know, it's important to learn your own way. But
tells Cody after this podcast.
He's doing the tour with us. He's playing drums for us on the tour. So we're stoked for that.
Yeah.
No, he's great.
Yeah, I love him. I guess one other one for me would be just kind of do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Don't let people put you in a box, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And don't be afraid, and if you feel like you're in a box, don't be afraid to push the boundaries of your sound. Like, it's okay to want to experiment with your sound.
Yeah.
Some people want to just churn out the same thing over and over again, which is fine if that's what you want to do. I like a lot of bands that just put out the same record over and over again.
There's a reason you like it.
But, like, don't be afraid to you know, try different things and try whatever it is that you may want to do and whatever you feel is right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess on the real, that's mine too, is like very corny, follow your dreams. Yeah, but
there's tomatoes at you.
You know, it needs to be said though, I guess.
We'll remember to edit that out once it's, I'm just kidding. No, no, you're good. You guys just finished up this record and you guys are about to go on tour. What has that been like, I guess, preparing for that now? And what's next for you guys?
We've been like as giddy as school children lately. Yeah. Just we've been
very expensive.
Yeah. Like we bought a new to us van, not a new van, but a new to us van. And we like kind of decked it out on the inside and
flat screen TV.
Yeah, we got
spoiler alert. Don't rob us.
It's funny. It had this old huge tube box TV with like the tiniest screen ever, and it had like a VCR and all it. And we like ripped it all out and installed like a flat screen and game systems and that kind of stuff. And then we've just been like shopping for like little things we know we're gonna need and like snacks and stuff like that, and just kind of getting all that stuff prepared. Because I don't know, and it's just been so exciting because it's been so long since we've gotten to do that.
Mm-hmm. What kind of snacks do you guys like to take on tour?
You guys are probably going to hate this.
That's all right.
But I have tuna.
I like tuna.
It might stink up the van.
The refrigerator? You bring in a mini fridge?
No, I'm not going to like, it's just like pouch. I'll eat the whole thing at once. I don't know. I like to bring, I eat way too much candy. I have a wicked sweet tooth. So a lot of candy, you know, chips.
I just ate a whole tub of cookie dough. Call me. Yeah, like a day, I ate the whole thing.
I took a bite, it was really good. But then, you know, certain things that are healthy, but like not too healthy, you get my drift.
Like there has to be like that perfect balance.
Yeah, fruit cups, which I know are like loaded with sugar, but you know, stuff like that, applesauce, maybe jerky, stuff that's gonna like give you at least a little bit of energy. Yeah. is nice, because like I know me personally, I eat way too much candy and then I'm like exhausted because I get a sugar crash.
Yeah.
But yeah, that kind of stuff that's easy to eat and is not gonna go bad, but will at least do something for your body. And lots of water.
Definitely with the water, yeah. What is it? Apple juice and lemon water are definitely good things for you to like at least take with you as a vocalist.
I love lemonade. I mean, that's different than lemon water. But
honey is another really good thing to take with you.
Yeah, I heard that those are definitely like, they're supposedly like old wives' tales, but apparently they do numbers for you to help you like prolong like your vocal cords if you're doing like prolonged like touring and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't know how true it is, but like apparently it's helped a lot of like great musicians and stuff like that.
Yeah. And of course you want to make sure you have things for like it, when somebody inevitably gets sick, because it's going to happen at some point.
Yeah.
Like you want to have,
knock on wood, it's not COVID.
Yeah. Like you want to have stuff like, you know, ibuprofen, Tylenol, basic painkillers for any reason. You want to have, you know, a first aid kit, stuff like preventative stuff, like if you
right
items, definitely bring multivitamins. Like if you start to like, you know, feel like a cold coming on, make sure you have stuff that's designed like, I don't know, emergency. Like emergency is a good one, or like airborne or something like that, that's gonna like keep you going, which is, I don't know, something that probably more people overlook than they should. When you're gearing up for tour, you don't want to think about anything bad happening, but
right, but it's natural happen. And stuff yeah. does definitely happen. And especially, I don't think COVID was something people really thought of ever happening like 2 years ago or 3 years ago when this popped up in our lives. And it's definitely changed the way the music industry has affected us as a whole, and especially like touring. So it's,
yeah,
you know,
and that's relevant now because like pretty much everywhere that we've gone except where we live has like mask mandates and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So like I bought like a ton of disposable masks, we all have like our vax cards and all that ready to go. It's like I guess touring in the current state is going to be probably a bit of a learning curve for us. We're probably gonna run into things that, you know, oh, we didn't know we needed this or whatever, but we've never had to tour during COVID before, so
yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Well, definitely hoping that you guys stay safe. And
that's one thing we talk about is we don't want to be idiots about it. Like we want to be careful. We don't want to be going all over the place and not being careful about it.
You know, getting to know you guys and all that stuff, definitely want to make sure that you guys stay safe, and you know, definitely want you guys to have fun and, you know, share experiences with everybody on this record, because I personally enjoyed it on a listening level, and definitely, like I said, on a emotional level, I enjoyed it, and I think other people are going to enjoy it as well, but I obviously want you guys to also stay safe while doing that in the process. But I want to thank you guys for, you know, sharing all these great things with me and obviously giving your time to being on the podcast with me. This is something new that I am bringing to Into the Void. Like I said, it's not just a website where I'm catering to just like a bunch of bands, but it's, you know, telling your story. It's telling stories for like a bunch of bands that don't get that recognition that I feel that all of you guys deserve. So I hope that it does definitely keep going and you guys will be a part of, you know, the story as it continues to unfold for a lot of other bands. I appreciate that.
We appreciate you for having us. And I honestly love doing stuff like this. Like, it's just fun to me. I don't know. But like I said earlier, I'm a bit of a talker. So like when people ask me questions about, you know, music related stuff or anything really, I like to be able to, you know, sit there and rant about it. But yeah, we really appreciate you having us.
No, I'm the same way. That's the main reason why I kind of started this podcast anyway, because I like, I don't know if you guys have like seen or read any of my other work. Like, I like writing about it, but it's like, it's a different level when you actually get to talk to the artists and like actually get to dig deeper into like what makes them tick. It's a fun other aspect that comes into it besides like typing a bunch of keys and like writing their story. It's cool when you get to like actually talk to them and dig deeper. So
much more personal.
Exactly. Hopefully we can do this again sometime, and I'll see you guys next week for another episode of Into the Void. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.